U.S. v. Wilson,
236082. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Robert Culp, assigned counsel for appellant Rebecca Wilson. I was not involved in the district court proceedings. The crimes committed against appellant's own children were indisputably horrible. She pleaded guilty and testified at two trials against her boyfriend, James Oliver Young, who had raped her daughter and convinced her to produce child pornography of her daughter and her even younger son. She herself was a victim of toxic relationships, sexual abuse throughout her entire life, but she did the right thing. She pled guilty, testified against Young. In the proceedings below, a medical professional opined that she was not a pedophile, but someone who had a personality disorder related to the relationship with Young, and even the government had said in their 5K1 that that she didn't appear to pose a threat to the public at large, despite the horrible things she did to her own children. Now, there's a surreal quality to appeals like this. I have several of them now, because we're talking about year 25 to 35. This, as you know, is a supervised release appeal. It's all plain error. There were no objections below. I concede that. It's hypothetical almost to be talking about those years, but it's important. This court has been saying recently in cases, both plain error cases and cases where the issue is properly preserved, that we need judges to be giving case-specific and defendant-specific reasons for why special conditions are imposed. In this case, I'd like to suggest, with apologies for the bad movie reference, that this was round up the usual special conditions of supervised release. They were, of course, with the fault of the defense counsel for not engaging the court in a dialogue, but they were imposed with almost no explanation. There's one comment about the alcohol condition, and I think this case was unique enough that there needed to be specific reasons on the record. That's my basic point.
If we find that as to some of these conditions, there's some case law that talks about sort of conditions that are so obviously needed from the record.
Understand.
If we thought that some of them fell into that category, but some of them didn't, would it make sense? Would you advocate sort of, look, if you're sending it back for the judge to articulate reasons on some, just do it on all? Sort of, how do we deal with that if we've got, I don't know, 8 or 10 special conditions? If we think they fall into different buckets, that maybe the substance abuse condition was adequately enough explained by the one comment.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that as a group if they are slightly different in their outcomes?
I advocate remanding them as a group. Even if you find that some of them are appropriate and some of them are not, I think the judge should have the opportunity to go back, have a proper dialogue with a lawyer who actually interacts with the judge, because they may affect each other.
Like the search condition and the computer monitoring condition, or right?
Exactly, and she actually wants the therapeutic condition, but I think the judge needs to know what's been going on. I mean, this sort of crept into the record, and I apologize for that, but she's not even getting therapy in prison in Alabama where she is now, and the judge may want to know that, but that's actually a separate point. But it strikes me that they should be considered as a package, because I don't know whether one affects the other. I mean, I've made some comments about all of them. We're not objecting to all of them, not objecting to the substance, and not really object. I pointed out some things that bother me, but I'm not objecting to the therapy. Some of the others, the lie detector. I suppose all of them could have some value, but the lie detector, I mean, this is someone who testified at two trials and was praised for being truthful at those trials of her co-defendant. So my general answer is, I guess I've said it twice now, is I think it's a package.
Can I ask on the lie detector, since you raised it, is there anything in the record that would suggest that her coercion of her children into the sexual conduct that she filmed was through deception, deceit of any kind, or
I don't think deception so much as just she abused her maternal authority. I mean, these children were young, five and eight, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was deceptive per se.
Not aware of any.
Yeah.
Can I ask, because as you noted, there is a number of authorities recently from this court on conditions and the need to articulate reasons, sometimes as just error and sometimes as plain error. I haven't found in binding authority discussion of the fourth factor of the plain error test in this context, which is whether it seriously affected the fairness, integrity, or public reputation of judicial proceedings. What would be, take the polygraph test imposition as an example. If that, and there's no discussion on the record, and maybe it's not obvious on the record, how is that fourth factor met here?
Well,
with respect to that condition.
Right, so my main case here is the Blow case, mm-hmm. the per curiam decision, and I don't think they discussed that fourth factor as such. They reduce it, Blow reduces it to this test of whether it's a reasonable probability that the sentence would have been different.
That's prejudice, right, essentially?
Yeah, I don't think Blow said any more than that, so I guess they kind of merged them into the two, merged the two together.
So you think that precedent eliminated essentially the fourth factor that had been in precedent prior to that?
I think it, no, I'm not saying they eliminated anything. I've used Blow because it's my best reported decision that's a plain error case.
I realize
I'm not really answering your question.
What you said near the beginning of your presentation is part of an answer, because I had the same question. What you said, if you recall, Mr. Kolb, was that we want to make sure that when these special conditions are imposed, that there's an explanation that's tailored to the specific circumstances of the case and of the individual who's being sentenced. And that has value not just for the individual, but for the integrity and fairness of the proceedings. Is that maybe an answer?
And that works for me.
Well, of course that works for you. Yeah. But you know, it is true that we haven't really discussed in these, at least even in the orders, we have not discussed this fourth prong of plain error.
Yeah.
And it's a little odd. But it may be just that when we castigate, for lack of a better word, the failure to articulate and say this is very important, that's our way of pointing out the fourth prong.
It's certainly a way to get the message across.
But isn't the best way to get a record is to incentivize defense counsel to object to inapplicable provisions and therefore force that conversation, require that conversation to be had. Ignoring that fourth factor seems to me to say to the defense counsel, you got no skin in the game in not objecting, because we've cut it out of consideration.
Yeah, and if I could make another suggestion, it's I've pointed out that in this case, the court did not have that usual dialogue with the defendant before sentencing. Did you go over the PSR with your client? That dialogue did not happen. Now, the government's pointed out that the defense lawyer did make a submission saying that, yes, we discussed this, but our position is that supervised release was not discussed, and maybe that dialogue, when it does happen, should include special conditions of supervised release. I think there's a tendency to not think about supervised release because everyone's like, oh my God, how many years am I going to get? people tend to not think about it, but this court is saying that it's important, and maybe it that should be at least a suggestion, if not a dictate from this court.
Thank you very much. We'll hear from the government. And you reserve some time for rebuttal. That's right.
May it please the court, Monica Richards for the United States. With regard to the supervised release conditions that were imposed here, the defendants have, I think I heard my colleague suggest that the concern with regard to alcohol testing is off the table. And the defendant's own statements at the sentencing that she talks to mental health counselors, she gets counseling, she's been begging for it, she doesn't want to go home right now, she can't go home right now, she needs to continue the work. To my mind, those support the imposition, her own words support the imposition in finding that regarding mental health treatment, regarding alcohol abuse treatment, and also, thank you, regarding the polygraph treatment, this court, this court in Bowles and a couple other cases cited in my brief at page 23 outlined the, or has already previously upheld the use of verification testing in supervising defendants convicted of sex offenses because that has a strong deterrent value. And the furthers the sentencing objections of rehabilitation, well, again, and deterrence, with reasonably small incremental deprivations of liberty. And that's exactly what the PSR cited when those were submitted as what the suggestions to the court as to what special conditions should be imposed.
So plain error, as I think you will agree, the rationale's got to be readily evident on the record. And I read your brief very carefully. She cooperated. And can you point us to somewhere in the record where prior to her arrest she deceived, she engaged in a series of lies that are relevant to this case?
Well, I would back up, absolutely, Your Honor, the fact that she was, as my colleague noted, she was the mother here. She did these things to her children. And so in terms of her obligation to her children and what she did to them, this is abhorrent. This is awful.
I disagree with that.
In terms of this woman's ability to tell the truth or be honest, or this isn't a case of fraud. This isn't a case of money laundering or anything like that.
What is polygraph test for?
So the
when you also have these other conditions of release that are designed to ensure that abuse does not occur, including consent to search based on reasonable suspicion, which is not all that much.
I agree, Your Honor. It's just that that's exactly what this court's already found. This court has already made those decisions, like I said, in those cases that I've cited at page 23, that there is a deterrent value. It's a strong deterrent value of the polygraph conditions, as this court stated in Bowles.
But is there a deterrent necessity for this defendant?
Oh, for this defendant, yes. Yes, but this defendant, yes.
A deterrent for falsehood. A deterrent, because there is a deterrent value to any potential restriction, but not all of them affect all defendants or supervisees. And again, what both of my colleagues have asked is, why does this defendant need a deterrent that is based in the question of truthfulness and deceit?
It's based on her offenses, the nature of her sex offenses that were conducted in her own home against her own children.
Which she is not alleged to have lied about when confronted.
Yeah, but she didn't, the only reason why this was caught was because of a tip, to a cyber crimes line. She would have kept doing this.
So, the logical conclusion is that every defendant who doesn't come in and say, you got me, voluntarily, would be subject to a special condition involving a polygraph test.
Because in
the government's view, as I understand your argument, that is a form of deception?
to flip Your Honor's question, if I might, just for one second, is that to have somebody who came in and testified truthfully at trial after getting caught when she had her own children and video evidence of those things, also, to my mind, doesn't say that she's a truthful person.
You're saying the defendant has to prove that this condition is not necessary. So you've not only flipped Judge Lohier's question, you flipped the burden.
Well, the burden here was on, at the moment, has been recognized. At the moment that the sentence, that the PSR came out, and that condition was in there, it was, in fact, the defendant's burden to object to that, right?
Right, which leaves us a plain error review.
Right. And so here now...
Right, the question that I understand you're going to is whether it's evident on the record. Right. And you're pointing to the specific nature of this crime, a mother horrifically abusing her own children in the way that she did, and both the maybe relying on the precedent that you're relying on, the imposition of a polygraph in the case of sexual abuse of minors, providing a deterrent effect to that conduct, not to lying, I gather, but to the conduct in issue, coupled with that factually you're pointing to that she didn't turn herself in, et cetera. So from those facts, you're arguing it's evident on the record and therefore affirm under plain error, it meets all the prongs of plain error. I suppose there's a separate question of whether, if we disagreed with you on the evident and the record, go back to my fourth prong question, whether the fourth prong is met, seriously affected the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of judicial proceedings. And here, I mean, I'll ask you what argument you made. I suppose there's both the argument as to the kinds of things that you pointed to on the record, even if they don't make it evident, might go to the fourth prong. There's what the nature of the burden of polygraph is. And then there's the fact that she could seek modification with the district court if it turns out to be particularly burdensome. Anything, do you make those arguments with respect to prong four and anything else? And could you take on defense counsel's contention that we seem to have precedent that doesn't discuss prong four in this context?
I appreciate that, but I thought that was Your Honor's question. But I take it well that fourth prong is not discussed much. In fact, the very thing I'm quoting from page 23 does, in fact, lump those together because it talks about the small incremental deprivation of liberty. So it did sort of undercut that prong four just right there in that one case in one sentence. But the concept here, again, is plain error review. What is it that is the problem under prong four? Seriously affects, this court has already said, that does not seriously affect the outcome. Can anybody, I'm sorry, with regard to this case and this defendant, we have a very different analysis to conduct, I need to say that, versus other defendants. But with regard to this defendant in this case, asking her to submit to a polygraph 20 years from now when things might change, all of those things, Your Honor's points also well taken, that she can move to modify. Those things all mean here that there was no, that we can't say that this seriously affects the outcome. The integrity of the proceedings, excuse me, does not seriously affect the integrity
of the proceedings. So all sex offenders can have polygraph conditions without explanation, is the government's position? There's no, that is a blanket, that our case law says that there's a blanket exception that child sex offenses can have polygraph conditions without explanation, or that this defendant somehow is special?
I see my time's up, just to answer your question. I would never, that's not my point. My point is that in here, in this case, they relied on the benefits,
but
and that was in the PSR.
That? Because this judge didn't tell us why they chose to impose that condition.
He did, he adopted the PSR. And the
PSR did not explain the basis for that condition.
I believe it did say for sex offenders, and it does loop back to the prior question. I understand that, but with regard to this defendant particularly,
counsel,
is where I would limit my remarks.
Maybe the way that I'll put it is in a very practical way, and I understand the time is important, resources are important, but what is the harm to sending back to, is it Judge Tracy?
Yes.
to the good Judge Tracy, and letting him tell us whether he would do the same thing, what the explanation was, what is the harm?
If that's the court's inclination, I don't see the harm. What I see in the flip side, as Your Honor's noted, is the time that would be involved, the wasted judicial resources that would be involved in conducting that. We're here on this record, this defendant, each condition without objection was imposed on a record that warranted it.
Where is the defendant
housed? I don't know.
Alabama.
She'd be brought to MDC for a resentencing, I guess.
That's a good question, Your Honor. Thank you. My colleague asked me that, and I could follow up as soon as we have that. It wouldn't be MDC, but it would be up in Buffalo.
Sorry.
Yeah, it would be up in Buffalo. That part I know.
By Southern that District. By the Eastern District.
I can only answer that much. Now it would Southern not District. Be MDC. But I didn't look into that as to where, as to what the exact, I guess it depends on the scope of the proceedings that the court.
That's the time and resources. It might take a while. But my question stands, which is, effectively, what's the harm?
That's this court's decision to make. That's nothing that I would.
So we'll hear some rebuttal on this. Is there anything else?
Oh, I was just going to say, though, Your Honors, with respect to the initial question was asked in terms of the remedy that's sought, I would appreciate some, if that's the way that this court's going, and I'm big if, hopefully, but if that's the way this court's going in terms of a remand for further discussion as to the imposition of these conditions, then I do believe it should be very limited to the court's particular concerns, the concerns with the very specific conditions, because right now, as I started with, I understand that the mental health counseling, the abuse substance counseling, some of the other things are off the table in terms of concerns.
Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel.
I feel compelled to point out, she mentioned the conversation we had, and I don't want you to think that you're conceding that there's going to be a remand in this case, because the conversation was about that other case.
Oh, sorry.
We have another case where we're actually asking the court to remand on consent because of the new decision. That conversation was about that other case.
Too.
I had to be fair to her about that because we have a cordial relationship.
Well, so, thank you for your fairness.
Yeah.
You got 37 seconds.
Okay. So I probably should leave things alone, but I did want to just mention briefly without opening the can of worms is that on the computer stuff too, I understand the concern, I do, but that there's a disconnect there. This is not that computer predator case in chat rooms talking to.
But she used Facebook.
She used Facebook as a communication device and texting and so forth.
That was central to the offense.
It's communication.
Was it not central to the offense? On its face.
Not the internet. The means of communication, which we now, I have one in my pocket, which we now call our computers, but it was really a phone and a camera, not a computer. So I just think the judge should be required to explain why he's going there, too. I'll leave it at that.
Is there anything else?
I'm sorry?
Anything else?
No, that's it. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll reserve the decision.